For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg. I am your host, Drew Mandel, here to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, here to talk about the NHL for the next couple of hours. Good to see so many familiar faces, so many new faces joining us in the chat. That's the best way to participate here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. While you're at it, while you're chatting and talking about the Jets and whatever else might be on your mind, be sure to smash the like button. Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Gentlemen, a pleasure to see you both on this Saturday morning. The three
the
of
pleasure
us
is
together
ours,
again.
Drew.
Oh, the pleasure is yours. That's nice to hear, Ezra. That's not usually how you say things to me, so I appreciate the compliment. And in that case, I'll say good morning to you first and see how things are in your world.
Things are good. Big Bombers win. Big Jays win yesterday. Did the Gold Eyes win yesterday?
No, I don't know if they won yesterday. Lost like 14-1 the day before, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so hopefully they won. I'll have to check on that. But obviously huge for the Bombers. Still undefeated at 6-0. But yeah, it's nice part of the summer where things are slowing down. It was a little bit busy on Wednesday. Not so much for the Jets. We'll have to get into it, boys, because I mean, based on the moves that Chevy made, over the last few days, you got to think that the only way this makes sense is if a huge move is coming up, whether that's with Pierre-Luc Dubois or Blake Wheeler, because some of the moves that have been made so far are, to put it nicely, are not going to have a major impact on the Jets. These are more players that are going to play for the Moose. When you're talking about, Kyle Capobianco and Ashton Sautner, from my dad's hometown of Flin Flon, Manitoba. Always got to get that in, right, boys? These are more Moose players, let's be honest. The only signing that really has any relevance is David Rittich, right? So, and I like that move. I mean, obviously, we all hoped that Eric Comrie was going to be re-signed, but unfortunately, that didn't happen. But yeah, not a very exciting week for Jets fans, that's for sure.
Never mind not an exciting week, Dave M. I mean, nobody expects the Jets to necessarily be an overwhelmingly active team at free agency. They've clearly shown through their actions over the years that they're not going to be big spenders in free agency. It's just the complete bewilderment regarding how they've approached this offseason that continues to leave people puzzled, concerned, questioning the organization. No one expected the Jets to be in on Johnny Gaudreau. Nobody expected the Blue Jackets to be there either, but we'll deal with that later on in the course of the program.
Are you talking about the obscure hockey market of Columbus, Drew? Like, if I hear that one more time, I'm going to absolutely lose it. Like, Columbus is a great city with a great, not only sports history, but hockey history. And I just love how everyone's saying, oh my God, I can't believe Johnny Gaudreau picked this non-traditional hockey market. Like, get out of here. Anyways, I just thought that was funny.
Thank you. We'll touch more on that, like I said, later on in the program. It's just what is the Jets' plan? They just don't seem to know what they're doing. They don't seem to, your captain is getting traded. No, he's not. Pierre-Luc Dubois is in Montreal for the draft, expecting a trade to happen. When is that? I mean, what is he going to do? Like, walk out onto the floor when the trade was announced, like a WWE wrestler getting announced and turning heel or turning face for the home crowd? I mean, what is going on here? Meanwhile, the Jets organization, the leadership, the people who allegedly have a plan, don't seem to know what the hell's going on. It is a disaster of the first order here in Winnipeg right now.
Well, I would only caution, Drew, it is a long summer and lots can still happen between now and the start of training camp. So before you, shed your hair, or wait, you have none. I think that I would caution a little bit of let's pump the brakes here. The reality for as most folks know, as most folks who pay attention, the Jets are never a free agent destination. We can go back throughout the course of, since the move from Atlanta, and the Jets aren't, what is it, a Dmitry Kulikov signing? Is that generally the most excitement that happens?
Only Jokinen was quite a blockbuster, Dave.
There you go. Oliokhin and Dmitry Kulikov. I mean, look, the reality for this Jets club is, and last year was a bit of an anomaly in the sense that they made a bunch of moves just in advance, right? They acquired Nate Schmidt. They acquired Brendan Dillon. Those were teams, of course, that were looking to shed. So the Jets were able to get their business done in advance of free agency. But free agency is never really a big day for Winnipeg. I mean, there's an augmentation. The Jets were, saw some guys leave, Austin Pagansky, CJC, some of the Moose players, really more than Jets players, some guys who could come up and fill in a pinch, but guys who weren't seen as NHL regulars, at least. But yeah, I mean, I'm not horribly surprised by what we saw in the last few days. I think it's more just a function of, I think, Drew, what you're suggesting, which is you just need to know what the plan is. What is the plan? And quite frankly, I think the PLD situation has become this monster. I mean, look, the idea that we're hearing, like, Pat Brisson is going on TVA in Montreal.
Yeah.
And basically saying, like, yeah, of course he'd love to play in Montreal. Like, why is his agent? I mean, it is a crazy, it's something, we have been following this. We do this all the time. I can't remember. I think someone in the chat used the word scorched earth policy. And like, I can't remember this overt, because you've made it an untenable situation because, you know, and the other thing that someone said in the chat, and I agree, like, you brought in a guy who was, I mean, essentially quit on his team in Columbus. You had his back. You traded away the number two, an unbelievable goal scorer to get this guy to be your center of the future alongside Mark Scheifele. You backed him up even when he didn't have a good first year in Winnipeg. You didn't throw him under the bus. As far as I can remember, I don't remember the Jets organization, publicly ever throwing PLD under the bus. In fact, I think it was the opposite. And so you had his back in all of these capacities. And I don't care. Like, to be honest with you, I don't mind if a player wants to exercise their right after they've been under team control, like Johnny Gaudreau did. Like, guys have that right. That's the whole idea of collective bargaining, right? This is the idea. This is something you, as a collective unit, have negotiated that this is your ability after so much team control to have that ability to go wherever you want. I just don't think it sets things up to make it so unbearable for the next 2 years, because the truth is, and there's, we'll talk about it more, but like the Blake Wheeler situation is an interesting one. And there was Frank Saravalli had interesting reporting about that and how the Jets are reluctant to retain salary. We'll talk about, like, there's so much stuff to talk about, but with respect to the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation, you're a Jets club now that is really kind of, you've put them in limbo. I mean, the truth is, if my Montreal, why would I want to trade any big assets for him? I wouldn't. If you know this guy's intention is to come in 2 years, if you're Montreal, you don't want to be good next year anyways.
You're 100% right, Dave. That's exactly what went through my mind. And like, you would have to think, guys, right off the bat. I mean, there's a bunch of players that won't be traded. I mean, there's not a lot of untouchables, but like, to me, if you're not getting Nick Suzuki back, who is somebody I would say is an untouchable. I hate using that word because I think, they would probably
if
move
Gretzky
him.
If Gretzky can be traded, nobody's untouchable.
Well, and we just talked about, Patrick Laine and Pierre-Luc Dubois. When those guys were drafted, second and third overall in 2016, nobody thought 5 years later those guys would be traded for each other, right? So just sticking with Dubois before we, get into I know Drew wants to get into some other things. As it relates to, Dubois and Wheeler.
No, Dubois is the priority right now. Look, the Jets have him, he's property, or his contractual rights or property of the Winnipeg Jets for the next two seasons. There's no question about that. That said, you're the Winnipeg Jets. You have really no leverage in this situation. It's not like another team, aside from Montreal, is going to trade you an arm and a leg if they know that Dubois is going to be in Montreal in 2 years' time. Mm-hmm. The nature of the negotiation right now, the nature of the situation is the Jets and the Jets and the Canadians sort of have to come to an agreement because there's no other way for the Jets to gain the right amount of value. Now, that means the Jets are going to, I just don't think that the Jets have any leverage in this situation. If Montreal is offering you something, I'm sort of, of a legitimate nature, I'm sort of surprised that they are, to your point, Dave, because they can get him for nothing except for money in 2 years' time. So if Montreal is offering you Kirby Dach and maybe another draft pick and maybe somebody else, a young prospect, Well, if you're the Jets, I'm not sure what you're holding out for. What cards are you playing? What leverage are you playing? Montreal's not going to be a playoff team this coming season. Montreal's not going to be a cup contender. It's not like they desperately need Pierre-Luc Dubois this year. Now, I understand Kevin Cheveldayoff would be saying, well, we don't want to give him away for nothing. Well, you're not giving him away for nothing, and you have no leverage because you're going to, if you don't trade him this offseason and you wait till next offseason, well, your offers aren't going to be any better. It's not like all of a sudden.
The only thing I would interject, Drew, is that if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff and I'm being offered, you know, nothing, like, or less than nothing, because essentially Montreal is Suzuki's an untouchable, right? So you're saying if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, I would say I want Suzuki, I want a center. But if I'm Montreal, I'm saying, well, why would I do that? Because I'll have Pierre-Luc Dubois in two years. But the Jets can still trade Pierre-Luc Dubois to a contender.
But who's trading?
No, I mean, well, because I'll tell you, a team that wants to win the Stanley Cup, a team that would have him
at the deadline.
I'm saying at the trade deadline, a team comes into the Jets and says, we'll take Pierre-Luc Dubois, we'll give you X, Y, and Z, and we're going to have Pierre-Luc Dubois for at least one more year to, you know, this year to challenge for a Stanley Cup and next year to challenge for a Stanley Cup. And then if he wants to walk to Montreal, that's the price we're willing to pay for a Stanley Cup. So there isn't that necessity from, there wasn't that necessity to trade Pierre-Luc Dubois. But again, like I said, the fact that we're hearing these stories, like he was in Montreal, it's funny. I think it's akin to WWE, like comes out slapping five to the crowd. Like what is going on? And then like I said, his agent being that, and we don't look, I don't listen to Montreal TV or radio. So I'm not like, you know, I can't say I'm in the know as to whether Pat Brisson is always on radio and always talking about his clients. I just think it's a very unusual situation. It's not something we've ever, to the best of my knowledge, and I pay attention to this stuff every single day, I don't ever remember a situation like this. So to me, you know, we talked about it. We've already talked about it. The idea that, don't you remember when the rumor kind of leaked out? We're like, why would this come out now anyways? It doesn't do anything. It certainly wouldn't be from the Jets' perspective. There's absolutely no justification. The Jets wouldn't want that because they were already taking on enough water with the Wheeler-Shifley situation that they didn't need the Pierre-Luc Dubois to add to their bailing out of the boat. So they wouldn't have done it.
No, hold on. But I agree with you, Dave. Let's go back though. Like I thought what I didn't like about Pat Brisson's comments is that he said, well, but I usually don't talk about this type of stuff, but because Dubois is an RFA, I was kind of like thinking to myself, like, what does that have to do with anything, right? Like,
if your client is not under contract.
He's not under contract, but he's under team control, right? Like you mentioned it, Drew, like all the leverage is with Dubois' camp. And if you don't think Brisson is the guy that's behind all this, Brisson is one of the most powerful agents, if not the most powerful agent. Brisson's
doing what his client wants to do. His client wants to clearly play in Montreal. Brisson is, you know, it's very sort of NBA-like where, you know, superstars will be playing on some random smaller market. Anthony Davis playing in New Orleans, wanting to get to Los Angeles, and his agent is basically pulling the levers behind the strings to make it happen.
That's Drew, I would cautionary tale. 60 points does not make one a superstar.
No disputing that, but in Dubois' mind, or Dubois has given his agent direction to get me to Montreal and make it happen, you know, however it needs to happen. So initially, maybe that was working behind the scenes. And when that hasn't, you know, formulated, when that hasn't come to fruition yet, that means now being vocal and being public about, you know, getting him to Montreal. And as long as he's not under contract, Pat Brisson is completely within his rights to talk to any team about his client, potentially for an offer sheet, potentially for trades, whatever the reasoning being. Brisson is doing what his agent, what his client wants him to do. And I have no problem with what Brisson is doing in this case. The Jets, it sounds like there was a deal that was basically close to done, if not done, at the draft that never actually happened. And I think now what you're seeing is Dubois' camp, you know, ratcheting up.
They're trying to force the hand, right? Yeah, I think it's safe to say, right, Drew, they're trying to force Chevy's hand here. And yeah, I guess, I mean, that's part of the hockey business, maybe the uglier side of the business, using the media and everything like that. But you're right. He's not the first. He won't be the last. But going back to what you said at the top of the show, Drew, about the direction of this team, like that's why I think so many Jets fans are nervous right now, and a lot of you know, people in the Jets organization are I imagine nervous in terms of the Jets are not going, like, the 13th pick apparently was in play, right? And I've heard, you know, could the Jets trade, you know, Dubois for like Kirby Dock and Caden Gooley? Like, that's just not enough of a return. Like, for me, this Jets team, all indications are this Jets team is going to go on a run and make the playoffs, right? I didn't say go on a long Stanley Cup run. They're going to try to get back into the playoffs. They're a win now team. I don't mean win the Stanley Cup now. They'd love to win the Stanley Cup, but you guys know what I mean. This is not a rebuilding situation, but if the Jets were considering trading Dubois for a first-round pick and a prospect, well, that's rebuilding. How are you going to replace Pierre-Luc Dubois' 30 goals and 60 points? Could it be Cole Perfetti? Of course it could be. I don't know if he's going to play the most of the season on the wing or at center. But, like, if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, like, you would have to think that you need to get a player up the middle. And unfortunately, I just don't know if a Nick Suzuki for Pierre-Luc Dubois one-for-one trade is on the table. And, like, Kirby Dach is a great young player, right? We had Mitch Love, former Saskatoon Blades assistant coach, on a couple of times to talk about Kirby Dach. Like, he's 21 years old. He's going to be a 50 to 60 point guy, right? So, but what's weird about this situation is he clearly wants to go to one team as opposed to Johnny Gaudreau, for example, who basically could pick from, you know, four or five teams out east, right? So it's a very weird situation. It seems like a trade is imminent, but it also seems like, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois could be a member of the Jets, you know, come September, and he could play the whole season here.
What I don't quite understand, Dave, is, you know, I see people that are upset with Pierre-Luc Dubois and, you know, saying that, you know, he's handling this in an inappropriate manner, blah, blah, blah. I mean, look, he's within his rights to leave the Jets 2 years from now. He could string them along for 2 years and pretend as if he's going to be interested in re-signing here. But it's clear that he's said to the team, I'm not re-signing here. He's made that publicly available. It's publicly known. He has no interest. He wants to go to Montreal. That's entirely his prerogative. How Kevin Cheveldayoff has somehow managed to turn Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic into this disaster and yet seems to skate away scot-free yet again. He's Teflon. I don't understand it. This is another instance, and there's been a litany of them where the Jets have mismanaged their assets. I mean, it, at some point in time, people have to look back and say, what are you doing? You're the leadership of this team. You are the driving force of this organization. You're the one who's supposed to have a master strategy. I was saying this to somebody at the Bomber game yesterday. The Jets seem to have a 6, 12, 18, and 24-month plan, but the 6-month plan, or the 12-month plan doesn't correspond and doesn't jive with the 6-month plan. The 18th-month plan doesn't jive with the 12-month plan, and the 24-month plan doesn't jive with the 18th-month plan. They're just spinning their wheels.
Does it have to be multiples of 6, or could it be multiples of 5 or 7?
I mean, it could be 3s if you really want. It doesn't matter to me in particular. It just seems like there's no organizational plan that people can see a vision for, and that to me is probably the most damning part of this offseason, is that there's nothing that makes sense regarding their activities.
Well, Drew, I mean, you're using what we call hindsight and to look back and to say, well, this doesn't make any sense at this point. But the reality is, when he made this trade, he traded for a player who he thought was going to be a center here with the Winnipeg Jets for the next 10 years. So at the time, how do you fault him? You have a guy in Laine who's not happy. I mean, and whether he made the right decision to move Patrick Laine is another question, but he did. So they obviously were, you know, on board with making that decision. And then he trades for a guy whose father works for the organization and parents live in Winnipeg and has worked for the organization since the Moose got to Winnipeg. So he's a guy who, I mean, again, Pierre-Luc Dubois, let's remember during the pandemic, came and lived in Winnipeg, right? People didn't know that, but he was here.
And worked at Home Depot.
Apparently. So the point I'm making is that I don't blame Kevin Cheveldayoff for acquiring a center who he thought with Mark Scheifele would be a tandem for the next 10 years. Why would you? I mean, teams win the Stanley Cup with center depth. You don't win the Stanley Cup without having good centers. So if you could have a 1-2 punch like Mark Scheifele, obviously playing defense, and Pierre-Luc Dubois, I mean, again, that I don't fault him for that because I think he made the best of a bad situation, right? Did Patrick Laine want to be here anymore? Maybe not, based on what has been suggested. So at the time, I don't have a problem with it. I think he took a risk. I mean, you have to take a little bit of a gamble and say, okay, I'm acquiring a player who is, I mean, again, we have a very large French-speaking community here in Winnipeg in St. Boniface. So it's not as if it's a completely foreign language to be spoken. You can hear people speaking French all the time. And again, I go back to the idea that his parents
graduated with a French immersion diploma. No big deal.
My mom was a French teacher. I mean, there's lots of Francais here. But the point I'm making is that I don't have a problem with the decision because at the time, it would have seemed to have made sense. Now, you can't, I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff couldn't see into the future. He couldn't see and say, well, in 2 years, this guy's not going to be happy. He's going to want to go scorched earth. So I don't blame him for that. And again, I saw it in the chat. I mean, you have to see what the return is. I mean, if Patrick Laine ends up being traded away for a bag of pucks, yeah, you're right. There needs to be a consequence for that because that's not sufficient for a guy who can score 40 or 50 goals in the NHL. But again, ultimately, you have to see what a return is. And ultimately, as you know, you hear people talk about it. Vander Kane wanted to trade. I mean, for whatever, I don't even know why he's going on Edmonton radio and saying, I wanted to be traded out of Winnipeg. It's like, buddy, you wanted to be traded out of Buffalo. You wanted to be traded out of San Jose. Where didn't you want to be traded?
Also,
out of?
What was so, that, 12 years ago? Like,
well, that's what I mean. Like why
Vander, you got to let that go, man.
No, I know. I don't even know why he's like bringing that up. It was ridiculous. But the point is, you know, there's guys who have requested trades or wanted to be moved on. Kevin Cheveldayoff isn't going to. So, I mean, again, if Montreal is offering you a bag of peanuts, well, you know what? Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to sign a 1-year deal with the Jets. Then he'll sign another 1-year deal. And the Jets, he'll better play his ass off. Because he plays, to be honest with you, his reputation is taking a major hit. I mean, the Jets aren't looking good right now. I'm not here to wave the pom-poms for the Jets organization. But Pierre-Luc Dubois' reputation, I mean, you forced your way off of Columbus. And now you're going to force your way off a second NHL team. One that's really catered to you to a certain degree. Now, we don't know what happens in the back end of the building. But they've done quite a bit, it would seem. And again, like I said, you're essentially repaying that by saying no. And Drew, you said it off the top. Nobody faults him for wanting to go to Montreal. But you got to keep that quiet. Because all you've done, and I said this when the news first came out, you know, it was a month ago. I said, all this does is weakens the Jets' bargaining position. And if you really want to leave, why would you do that? Makes no sense. So,
I just wanted to say one thing here, Dave, too. Yeah, I just wanted to jump in. Sorry to cut you off, but I was going to say, like, we don't know. Nobody knows this. At least I haven't seen this reported anywhere. Maybe you guys have. I don't think this has come out at all. But this whole Pierre-Luc Dubois Montreal thing, like, you have to ask the question, when did the Jets and Chevy become aware of this, right? Like, did they become aware of it through a third party? Or did, you know, Pat Brisson inform the Jets of this? Let's say, you know, at some point in the season, was it at the end of the season? But ultimately, it comes back to, you know, I agree with both of what you guys are saying. I think this has been mismanaged a little bit because, look, it's unfortunate. What's most unfortunate is that Pierre-Luc Dubois just had an incredible bounce back year, right? 1 point away from his career high. And, you know, he would have got that if he played all 82 games, right? And you know, he really, I thought, became a leader on this team, right? Like we all talked about how on a night in, night out basis, who were your leaders on the ice with their play? Kyle Connor, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Josh Morrissey, right? Those were the three guys that we talked about all year long. If you're looking at the new leadership group, and I know Drew has been calling for this for a while. If your old leadership group was, you know, Wheeler, Scheifele, Morrissey's been part of that as well. And so is, I should mention Adam Lowry. That to me, the Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor are the guys that have kind of stepped up. I think you guys would agree in terms of not just how they've performed, but their leadership, the way they've put this team on their back. That's what's the most unfortunate is that for Jets fans, I think it's a tough pill to swallow because you thought, okay, maybe Dubois will sign a 1-year deal or you know, I guess a 2-year deal, which would make less sense. But still, there's a good chance that he's going to sign long-term. And I'm pretty sure the Jets and Chevy would love to sign him to an 8-year contract. So we don't really know when it became apparent to the Jets that Dubois wanted to leave. But the tricky thing here, and that's why, you know, at the top, when we started talking about this, you know, if he only wants to go to one team and you ideally want to get a center back, like I saw people talking about, you know, Ryan Poehling, Like Ryan Poehling is a couple of years older than, you know, Kirby Dach, but he's an unproven NHLer, similar age to Dubois. I think there's Dubois is turning 24. He's 24. Poehling is 23. And, you know, he's played, I think, around 100 games or something like that. Like, but, you know, we don't really know what Ryan Poehling is at this point. Pierre-Luc Dubois, 24 years old, has already established himself as a bona fide number one, number two center. So in terms of what Drew was saying earlier about, like, you know, managing assets and everything like that, you have to get a great return. Like, if the return is going to be, you know, prospects, like I mentioned, Caden Gooley, you guys know, was one of the best defensemen of the WHL with the Oil Kings. Like, he's a top prospect in the Habs system. Is he part of a package? I don't know. Like, he could be untouchable. Kent Hughes could say, you know, I don't want to trade him. There's no way I'm trading him. So, like, you have to, like, so who else is it? Like, there's, I don't think, you know, we're talking about a Brendan Gallagher trade. I don't think, you know, like, and let's be honest, there aren't, it's not like exactly like the Canadians have 15 forwards that are desirable. The Habs are, you know, pretty thin up front, right? So you have to be talking about either Nick Suzuki or Kirby Dach or Caden Gooley. Like, these are the types of players that you're talking about. So it's just really hard to kind of make sense of this and try to figure out, like, is a trade imminent and who are the Jets getting back? Because that will determine the course of this season. If they're not getting, you know, a top six center back, then they're most likely not going to be a playoff team this year.
The opening segment is brought to you by Betway, one of the most trusted voices in sports betting, both in Canada and all around the world. Betway is the sports betting app that puts you, the customer, at the forefront. With a large selection of betting options and sports, as well as strong promotions and fair odds, head on over to, what are you waiting for? Head on over to Betway and bet your way. Must be 19 years or older to play. Please play responsibly. When we come back, more Jets talk. Jeff Hamilton, the Hammer, joins us on the program. Saturday morning, Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend from the Winnipeg Free Press. He covers the Bombers. He covers the Jets. He's a floor hockey extraordinaire player. Our good friend Jeff Hamilton is on the program. Jeffrey, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen. If the camera caught me looking down, it was because I just saw your guys' tweet, and I retweeted saying that was a complete oversell. So, but here I am nonetheless. It's a victory that it's not a victory. I'm up usually early, but late night last night, great game in the Bomber game, and great morning so far to join you guys.
I appreciate you joining us after that late night. And yeah, that was just a fantastic atmosphere, a fantastic football game between two very high achieving football teams. Great night at the old ballpark there, Jeff. You know, and I couldn't help be struck by, you know, the atmosphere in the stadium. You know, you got 30,000 people and they're having the time of their lives. They're screaming from basically kickoff right through the final whistle, and they're excited to be there and they're cheering on a winning team that has just proven that after so many down years has now become the class of the CFL. And then you go, you know, north in the city to the downtown arena, where so many nights in the last number of years, it's been a library. It's been a place of dismay and despair, as opposed to excitement and joy. And just the contrast between where the Bomber organization is right now and where the Jets organization is in terms of their go forward plan, I would say. I mean, and I think this week this week is just another example of that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, there's always going to be an internal competition, you know, not necessarily for fans. I mean, certainly for fans' eyeballs, but just, you know, fans. I know some people just love hockey, some people just love football, plenty more love both. It's a healthy competition between the two local clubs, right? They're not owned by the same people. They're competing for the same dollars. And there's certainly, you know, I don't think the Bombers are obviously happy that the Jets aren't doing well. But, I mean, look at their success. They've just, I mean, how many times we write back-to-back champions and stories? It still feels weird, you know, to write that about the Bombers, given what they had, you know, experienced before. And now you look at the Jets, and, I mean, it's just a stark change in direction. I mean, there was lots to be excited about this time last year, hanging into that past season with all the moves they made, and you know, fast forward a year and it's just like, what's the plan? You know, we're still trying to answer that question, still trying to figure that out. So Good news is, I think there's always a, you know, the it's been a long off season for Jets fans the last few years, but I think there's always that renewed optimism. I just think that they need that extra jolt at some point this summer with some good news, because it's just been continually bombarded with, you know, whether it's reports of players not happy, whether it's, you know, that long coaching search. It's just there's been a lot of downs. I think the Jets fans need a couple ups here over the next couple of weeks, months.
And I'm going to uplift everybody with my excellent question for you, Jeff. You know this is coming, right? And I'm sure you've talked to Hassan Remus about this earlier this week on Winnipeg Sports Talk. But, I mean, Pat Brisson obviously isn't being quiet, and he's letting everybody know that didn't already know that Pierre-Luc Dubois wants to become a member of the Montreal Canadiens. Like, where are you at in terms of, you know, how close the Jets are to a trade? Because I feel like you could flip a coin right now in terms of, you know, whether Pierre-Luc Dubois is traded. Like, I thought, you know, there was a good chance that he'd be traded around the draft. And, you know, as a second part of that question, like, how close do you think, you know, any other moves are? Namely, you know, is a guy like Brendan Dillon in play? I know, I'm not sure if you asked Chevy that at his press conference earlier this week, but I mean, it seems like one of these defensemen has to go, because the Jets have signed some, you know, AHL defensemen, Capobianco, Ashton Sautner, guys like this, but it seems like there's still a logjam on the left side. So where are you kind of at with Pierre-Luc Dubois? Has anything changed, you know, since the draft for you?
You know, it's funny. We get the emails, right? Like, Winnipeg Jets have signed, and that's what it shows in the inbox. And it's like almost like you have to, you know, each time I go, is this it? Like, is this a moment here? And then I click on it. And no offense to any of the guys that they've signed since, but you know, they have their hockey DB resumes right there, and you skip right to down to the bottom, and it's, you know, a lot of success in the AHL and very minimal in the NHL. Again, not exactly the moves Jets fans are waiting for. As far as Pierre-Luc Dubois, I think it's a fascinating situation. I caught your guys' conversation on a little bit before I jumped on. You know, I have kind of two minds about it. It's like, you know, it's a business, right? The NHL is a business. The GMs treat it like a business. Coaches treat it like a business. And of course, players treat it like a business. And the reality is, you know, I think instead, you know, it's funny, right? Look at Johnny Gaudreau right now, for instance, right? Like, I mean, Calgary Flames fans are pissed off at him because he wasn't straight up. He wasn't clear. So, I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois could easily have said, you know, look, I'm, you know, I want to see, because I don't think anyone would have blamed him if he came out and said, look, I want to sign a 1-year deal. I'm a Winnipeg Jet. I'm happy to be a Winnipeg Jet, but I want to see what happens here. I don't know what, you know, it's not my, you know, it's my business to be happy with where I am. And after a season last year that I'd argue Pierre-Luc Dubois was for sure, if not the top, one of them, biggest leaders in that locker room, whether it was on the ice or off the ice. I mean, he was accountable on the ice. He had one of his best seasons of his career. He was accountable off the ice. He spoke to media whenever there was, you know, and tough, you know, whenever the times were tough. And as we know, there were a lot of tough times last season. And he spoke, you know, like a captain. I mean, that's why a lot of people were writing about, you know, should Pierre-Luc Dubois be the next captain? But at the same time, I mean, the Jets were a train wreck last year. I mean, they were a train wreck on the ice. They were a train wreck off the ice. Guys aren't happy. And I think, you know, so from that standpoint, I don't blame Pierre-Luc Dubois. It's the language he uses. He's decided to tell them in 2 years that he's testing, you know, unrestricted free agency. And that to me is not a, hey, this is my plan, you know, show me why I should change it. That was, hey, this is the plan. Trade me now while my trade value is higher, so you know, you know, so I can be where I am. And then when you look at all the ensuing comments from his agent, like, that's all strategy. That's not a guy going unhinged on a radio station or talking to some guy at a bar and someone picks it up and writes a story. That's a guy who is planting that specifically. So to answer your first part, Ez, I think that a trade is imminent. I think he will be dealt. Like, I don't think he comes back. I think that is going to be with the Montreal Canadiens, whether that's sooner or later. I think, you know, the Jets don't, the only thing I could see not working is the Jets don't like to get ripped off. In fact, they like to be the big winners in trades, or like to be perceived as the big winners in trades. And so very rarely do they take risks on guys. They need to be sure of everything. So the only thing I could think of that would snag that would be as if they didn't get exactly what they want. But I get the feeling that because, you know, based on those comments we've seen from Pierre-Luc Dubois' agent, I get the feeling that Montreal is prepared for this. I think they've, you know, they talk about him being a restricted free agent, and that gives them a little bit of liberties here as far as like what he can say to the media or publicly without being viewed as tampering. I think that, you know, I think that there's a mutual interest there. And so my guess would be that over time here, whether it's days, weeks, certainly before the season, those talks heat up and that conversation gets more serious and Pierre-Luc Dubois is playing for a different team next season. Because I just, like Blake Wheeler, I don't know how you come back in the offseason. Like, I can't imagine, because the and that's what's so confusing about all this, is the perception is the Jets are going to run it back. I mean, there's nothing, you know, like, and run it back without guys like Paul Stastny or Evgeny Svechnikov, you know, like, I don't know where they're going to replace those guys, but they're going to run it back. And so we're going to have what will be an absolutely fascinating opening day of training camp. It's like, who do you guys want to talk to? Pierre-Luc Dubois and Blake Wheeler. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be day one of training camp. And like Pierre-Luc Dubois, I can't see Blake Wheeler wanting to come back and answer those questions about, oh, so what do you mean you were helping facilitate a trade out of town? What was about the team you didn't like? What, you know, where did you want to go? Should you be the captain? Like, those are not good questions. So I do think there's change coming. I think it's certainly gone slower than a lot of people anticipated when you look at the two kind of fake deadlines in the NHL draft and then free agency. But I do think that it was never the Jets' plan to sign big free agents, right? Like to go out there and whether that was the plan or whether that's just the reality of the Jets, I think was a little surprising was the lack of action at the draft. So I thought maybe that wouldn't, you know, maybe that would possibly mean moving up in the draft or whatever, right? Just, you know, a little bit of action there and that passed. But I don't think the fireworks have passed us. I think this summer is still going to be very fascinating. They're going to see significant moves made. And I think you have to see significant moves made, because the fact of the matter is, I'll round up this rant here, is that the Winnipeg Jets wanted Barry Trotz for the coaching, but as much as for the headline. So if the headline coming into camp is they did nothing, this is the same group, how can they expect to get benefits of anything? Ticket sales will not be up. People will be, you know, for lack of a better term, livid at the lack of movement. So I definitely, if you ask me, anticipate some fireworks here over the next while before the season starts next year.
Saturday morning, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press.
Jeff, you know, we're going to be talking about running it back so much this summer. People are going to think we're talking on a football show, not on hockey, but I think you're right. I think that's been
the common. Let's get DB on here.
Yeah, like seriously, like it's hilarious, because you're right. It seems that way. Now, of course, it's a long summer and lots can happen between now and training camp, but yeah, that's from Blake Wheeler a little bit. And Frank Saravalli on his DFO podcast essentially said the Jets don't want to retain salary, which, I mean, if I'm the Jets, I wouldn't want to retain salary either, but I don't know how you trade an $8.3 million contract without retaining some salary. What are you hearing with respect to with the Wheeler situation? And I know you just answered a little bit saying you don't anticipate him being here, but are you hearing anything in that regard? Are you seeing any sort of indication that could be happening relatively quickly? Or do you think the Jets are kind of stuck saying, okay, we got to deal with this fire, then we'll deal with that fire, and then we'll deal with that fire?
So the way I view it is, look, I thought that there would have been some action at the draft with that. You know, certainly you could have made an argument for free agency because, like you said, the cap, whether that was half the cap, whether that was his whole 8.25 cap gone, that's a lot of space to move and make moves. Again, I don't think that was a big plan for them, was to move out his contract and bring in some star-studded, you know, free agent or go after, you know, a high-end free agent. But I will say this, I feel like, you know, there's obviously, you know, it takes this team is so loyal to its players, and particularly to Blake Wheeler, that it probably took an emotional and somewhat physical toll on this organization to get to the point where they had to move on with Blake Wheeler. So you start seeing the reports about him facilitating a trade. Knowing Blake Wheeler, knowing how proud he is, knowing, you know, the kind of person that he is, I just don't think that he would want to be like, you know, once he committed to that, once he, you know, committed to not just, it's not just being like waking up and being like, okay, you know, I'm willing to be traded. it's waking up and saying, okay, what I put my career on the last 10 plus years to get the, you know, and particularly over the last 7 or 8 or whatever that he's been captain, you know, I've dedicated a good chunk of my life to, with a goal of bringing a Stanley Cup to Winnipeg. I truly think that's heartbreaking for him to have to, you know, realize. And it's not just the realization that, that he, you know, won't be the leader of that group that gets it done. I think it's the realization in his career that he's no longer the guy to get that done. And so I think that's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a tough thing to swallow. And then you have to decide where you want to go. Right. I mean, he has the five team movement clause. Now we know that he's been, because those things aren't like, they're not a moving target. You don't wake up tomorrow morning and be like, ah, you know what? I'm going to take San Jose off the list and I'm going to throw, you know, this team on. There's a set date that you have to issue those teams. So the Jets would have already had that list of teams. They know who the group of teams he'd be willing to play for, but he's showing a willingness to add to that team, or if it's the right situation. Now, I've always viewed Blake Wheeler as an acquisition as a plan B, C, or D. So I always thought that no team was going to clear space unless they had a player that they wanted to dump on the Jets for, say, half a salary. And now, you know, a team like Pittsburgh is intriguing to me when it comes to Blake Wheeler, because you know what, there's some rumblings that like a Jason Zucker could be a return player back, right? He's got a bit of a salary thing. Maybe he needs a, you know, change of scenery. You know, maybe that would be the, you know, a good piece for the Penguins to build on. Right. So like there would be a little bit of money in, money out, but I always viewed Blake Wheeler as a plan B for other teams. So plan B was only or C or whatever for team was going to happen after free agency, right? They weren't going to go like that salary cap money, guys, as we know, is so valuable. It's so sacred that even, you know, eating up $4 million, half of what Blake Wheeler's contract is a pretty big investment. So I think a lot of teams were looking at, okay, let's see what we can get. Let's see what, you know, who are our targets. And then now Blake Wheeler's there. I think that's where the conversations start talking. Now it's going to be dependent on the Jets. I've heard the Jets were more inclined of getting rid of a draft pick, for instance, the late draft pick in the first round to dump an entire salary in Blake Wheeler. Like I heard at that point now, you know, and so it kind of speaks, I'm not saying it confirms this, but like, you know, the recent reports that the Jets aren't willing to eat up any salary would kind of suggest they're willing to give other pieces. Cause I don't think you're not just going to look at a Blake Wheeler and every team, you know, every team out there knows why you're trading this guy. You're trading this guy because you need a culture change. And so I don't think you're going to have a big lineup of people like that are going to want to be giving you everything for Blake Wheeler. You're going to have to do a bit of a give. And whether that's like a, you know, a Ville Heinola, which I know a lot of fans wouldn't like, but his name's been thrown out there, or another prospect. You know, if you're not going to eat up salary, you're going to have to give a piece. So, but you know, I go back to my original point in that I just don't think there's any turning around from this process. And so I think it's going to be a slow, perhaps somewhat painful process for fans as we, you know, wait to figure this out. But, you know, just because the Jets aren't willing to eat up salary at this point, that might change in a few weeks as the season gets closer and you know, they need to start making some, you know, some moves or establishing what the room is going to look like. Cause you have to think, you know, guys that are fine with this team, you know, guys we aren't talking about from, you know, deep in the depth to the top guys kind of want some clarity on who's going to be in their team. It must be an awkward situation to be like, oh, I'm reading about our captain possibly gone. I'm reading about our top two centermen. They're happy. Oh, wait, Mark Scheifele is cool. So he's back. Nice. That's awesome. and then having, you know, to deal with, you know, other rumors like, you know, Brendan Dillon possibly being out. So it's, to me, this has just been a, you know, it's been the elephant in the room. It's made the situation a bit more awkward, but I certainly do think that it's not one of the things that was ever going to get rushed because I don't think it was a high priority on any other team's list. And now that we've seen the dust settle and now teams are looking at their rosters and comparing themselves within their division or their conference, maybe a guy like Blake Wheeler, whether that's at 4 point something million or 8 point something million and dishing out somebody on your team with salary, maybe Blake Wheeler, who still has at least a good year in him, under the right circumstances, could be that extra piece.
Jeff Hamilton, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, Jeff, I was struck by Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments on Wednesday after, you know, the press conference after the free agency day, it sort of wound down. And he's talking about Eric Comrie and he's, you know, trying to make chicken salad out of chicken bleep in a completely mishandled situation by the team. He's like, well, we went more than we wanted to go in an offer to Eric Comrie, but we were really concerned about salary arbitration with him, as if there was nothing in between, you know, retaining his rights as an RFA and letting him walk, and there was no middle ground to be found. And what struck me is that, you know, look, the Jets mishandled that. I don't think there's anybody could argue anything differently. Yet he's trying to spin the mishandling into a positive, or trying to give some sort of faux rationale around it. And what strikes me about this organization is that they maybe don't treat the fan base as the savvy hockey fans as they really are. And I think the fans want to know what the strategy and what the approach and what the plan is for the Jets organization moving forward this year, next year, maybe even the year after. And all they're hearing from the Jets is flotsam. They're not hearing anything substantive. Do you think that's a fundamental sort of organizational flaw with how they're approaching things at this moment?
Drew, are you trying to trigger me right now or something? Like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I think it's an absolute breakdown by the organization. This has been their MO since day one. They've tried to dictate the narrative since day one, whether that's keeping a distance between players and media, whether that's just, you know, being the most impossible team to crack. Absolutely. I mean, this is a team that came out after a miserable season and didn't actually fire their coaches. Ed went one step further and said, well, hey, whoa, guys, we're not firing these guys. Don't put words in our mouths. Their contracts just so happen to be expiring, which makes them eligible to reapply for their jobs if they prefer to do so. Meanwhile, those guys are out for beers that night after they got canned and start telling this organization's curious why the public knows these guys are coming back. It's like everyone but the Jets knew that staff wasn't getting fired that was fired. And so, like, I mean, and even if you don't want to use the word fire, like, this team doesn't, I don't even know what it is. Like, I don't know if it's an insecurity. I don't know if it's just none of your business and arrogance or whatever, but like this organization couldn't even say, look, we appreciated the work that these men did for our organization for a long time, but we're changing direction. You know what I mean? They actually went as far as to say that these guys could reapply for their jobs. It was just the most. So yeah, I do think it's insulting. I mean, look, this team's leadership doesn't like to tip their hat on anything. You know what I mean? There's a reason why Darren Dreger gets reports 30 seconds before the Jets tweet them. It's because it's a one phone call, one guy, you know, you scratch my back, I'll give you a 30-second heads up relationship. That's just the way this team works. I mean, look, you know, there are some things that certainly certain things that this team, you know, can't hide from. We all knew that they were going after Barry Trotz. That was so obvious. And that, you know, they would have loved for everyone not to be that. But it got to a point where, you know, like, Barry Trotz had to issue a public apology to the Jets for not taking the job. You know what I mean? Like, it was just this, like, I don't know, man. It's super weird. But it is. And I think that, but I think this is what their comfort is in hiding things. I don't think they, you know, like, and look, I'm not trying to, you know, turn a PR thing here, but like, where are the players' availabilities throughout this time to, you know, to maybe shell shock some of this negative press? Like, why isn't an Adam Lowry coming out and saying, you know what, I'm building here, and, you know, I'm having a family in Winnipeg, and I signed for, you know what I mean? Like, where's the PR from the website even? Like, it's just, these guys are sitting on their hands, just letting, you know, taking lick by lick by lick. And it just seems like, you know, them to come out and say, you know, Cheveldayoff's conversation was like 10 minutes, you know what I mean? And we got the, you know, a couple questions, guys, at like 6.5 minutes, you know what I mean? Like, they purposely kept it short. And you know, whether it's the Svechnikov buyout, like, yeah, too expensive. He had 17 points in 72 games. What did you think he was going to do? Take you to the cleaners? Like, you know, like, to not qualify him, and then to not play Eric Comrie those 90 minutes. Like, I almost feel like that could have possibly been Eric Comrie, you know, to force him into arbitration. Cause I think what Eric Comrie wanted was opportunity. I mean, you know, he certainly loves the organization. He loves Wade Flaherty's instruction. He certainly has a great relationship with Connor Hellebuck, but you know, he's ready for more and he's not getting any younger. So he needed that thing. So I can almost see the Jets being like, you know, we'll do you a favor. We won't make, you know, we won't force you into arbitration rights and we won't, you know, whatever. We'll lock you in at that, because I can't think it would have been too expensive. I don't think he would have got much. He would have got less probably than what he got now, or maybe in and around. I don't see why he wouldn't.
Well, when the season ends, I mean, is Comrie not going to, if the Jets go to Comrie at the season being over and say, here's a 2-year contract worth $1.1 or $1.2 million, you know, is he not going to accept it? It just made it like, and then to just come out and, anyway, sorry, I'm getting upset.
You know, and we all know how important backup goalies are. So it's like, you know, like, it's not like it's this, like, even if it was a $1.8 million deal, like, for you, like, you need a valuable backup. And I don't know if you guys have checked the schedule out, but it's absolutely bizarre world with the back-to-backs. It's bananas. I think, like, there's 17 back-to-backs. So that would assume he'd get at least all those games. And maybe, here's the other thing, and I'm not, and this is just my own prediction, we'll go down this rabbit hole with the backup goalie situation here, is that I think that Eric Comrie looked at it and been like, I'm tired of finding out at 2:30 in the morning that Connor Hellebuck's too tired to go. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think it's one of those things where you get off the plane and it's like, you know, Connor's just like, yeah, man, I'm probably not going to play tomorrow. I don't know for sure yet, but, like, you know what I mean? So I think he wants a little bit more of a role where he's established, you know, maybe a guy, like, we also know how durable Connor Hellebuck is. He doesn't get hurt. So, like, you go to a team where, you know, look at Laurent Brossoit, right, in Vegas. I mean, you know, Leonard got hurt. He got a chance. Too bad that he got hurt after that. But, and I'm not saying the backup goalies are hoping for that, but that's the kind of situation that helps them in their careers, where they can stay in the net and stay there for a long time. So as much as Eric Comrie would have appreciated his time in Winnipeg, I certainly just think he looked at it as like, well, you know, this guy would play 82 games if he could. If, you know, I don't think I'm going to build much more on the sixth, you know, on the 17 or 16 I played last season.
I agree with you 100% on Eric Comrie. It's just unfortunate, Hammer, because, as you know, such a good guy, loved playing in Winnipeg after, you know, he was claimed on waivers and then came back. And, you know, it's just an unfortunate situation. I agree. Like, what, you don't want to pay him, like, what, this idea that the Jets can't pay their backup goalie more than $1.3 or $1.4 million.
And would they have been willing to do it for 2 years? Right.
Well, exactly. And so, you know, $1.3 million
for Eric Comrie, or
I think he's underpaid. I think Buffalo got a good deal. I think you could argue that Comrie, you know, has earned $2 to $2.5 million a year. He just, and again, you know, he has one great NHL season, but it's not just the one great NHL season, because he's a proven AHL goaltender as well. So I'm with you 100%. I think we all are. A lot of Jets fans were unhappy to see Comrie go, but, you know, as they say, you got to move on. And I wanted to stick with Connor Hellebuck because, you know, there was some talk in the off season. I guess we're still in the off season, but you know what I mean? A couple months ago, mm-hmm. about, you know, Hellebuck and, you know, how is he doing with all of this, you know, change upheaval with, you know, guys like Dubois and Wheeler potentially out the door. Right. And it kind of reminds me of a couple years ago, you know, with the uncertainty on the Jets defense and the fact that Connor Hellebuck was going to have to steal games and play 60 to 65 games a year. And I think that's something that, you know, is maybe getting lost a little bit here with this Jets team. As you said, if the Jets essentially run it back, you know, maybe they move one player, a Brendan Dillon or something like that. But, you know, regardless if Dubois and or Wheeler is traded, I mean, the way this team is constructed, is it not still a team that lives and dies by Connor Hellebuck? Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, we talk about a lot of the negativity, right, Jeff? Like, to me, that is, you know, what the Jets still have an advantage over almost any team, except for maybe, you know, Tampa Bay, maybe the New York Rangers with Shesterkin, is that on a night-in, night-out basis, most likely Connor Hellebuck is going to be the best goalie on the ice.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think the Jets are looking at this 2-year window, whether they deal Pierre-Luc Dubois, whether they deal Mark Scheifele, which seems less and less likely as time goes on, or whether they thought, you know, I think they look at that window and go, okay, that's our big window before big changes are made. Because I don't think that, you know, unless things improve, I don't think the Jets can look at their roster and go, yeah, everyone's going to want to be back, you know, on deals. Like, I mean, it's not just fixing the culture in the dressing room, it's actually getting results on the ice. I mean, if this make the playoffs again next year, I mean, this is a really failed window, if you will, of success for this team. And I do think, like, if you look at a guy like, you know, Connor Hellebuck, because his name was being tossed out about, guy, you know, potentially wanting to move or looking, you know, I think a handful of guys at the trade deadline this past season didn't go, I want to trade, I want out of here. But I think they would have talked to their agents and would have said, look, if you guys are looking to make a change, you know what I mean? Like, we'd be willing to get moved. You know, we're not going to sit here and stew if we don't get moved. They just, you know, went ahead and been like, so we're not asking for a trade, but we're letting you know that if for some reason our name gets brought up, you know, you don't have to talk to us, or there isn't a reluctance or whatever. Right. And I think that was, and so if you look at Connor Hellebuck and the reports around him about potential trades or whatever, I think a lot of guys and Pierre-Luc Dubois and Mark Scheifele and Paul Stastny, you know, reasons for guys who are here and who aren't here. I think they really reflected on last year and said, that wasn't a lot of fun. You know, I don't want to go back to that. Like, hockey's supposed to be fun, and hockey wasn't fun last season. So I think there's a lot of people that are just, you know, they're just, either they don't see a fix to this, an easy fix to this, whether that's Pierre-Luc Dubois and why he's, you know, been public with his camp about wanting to move. But it's also one of those things where I think it might be pressure on the organization, because players don't have a lot of power, you know, and they go, that's not my pay grade. Well, you can influence those people with those pay grade with certain things. And if you don't feel like the organization is trending in the right direction. And again, like, this is one of the, it's not like a sit down and shut up situation for players. They have influence and they want their teams to be successful. So they have their cards they play. And so I just think it's one of those things where they need to start seeing some positive things happening before you start hearing some positive news. I just think it's all been doom and gloom. And with all doom and gloom and all those reports, that's the narrative that's going to get built. You know, the reality is I think there's pressure points at different points in the year where you can, you know, leverage your position, you can use your agent and all that stuff. But if you don't get moved, it's like, okay, well, back for another year. Now it's business as usual. And so, you know, we'll see what happens here, but I don't know. I find it to be a very fascinating situation.
Something's got to give is what you're saying. Right? I think everybody, I think in the media, you know, in hockey fans, observers of this team, everybody's kind of looking at the Jets with all of these rumors swirling. And usually where there's smoke, there's fire, right, Amber? It's kind of like, okay, like what's going to happen here? Whether it's a minor trade or a signing, like something's got to happen. But I'll let Dave M get in here for the last question.
All right, Jeff, I'm going to ask you to get your crystal ball out and figure this out, because, you know, one positive for the Jets is that, you know, folks want to focus, everything's negative, but let's focus on the positive slightly. They've got a lot of good young left side defensemen. Now, one of the negatives for those defensemen is most of them are waiver exempt. In fact, all of them are waiver exempt with the exception of Logan Stanley.
Right.
So how do you see this playing out? I mean, you talked about Brendan Dillon's name being out there, but I know that especially a guy like Rick Bowness, he may not like a guy like Brendan Dillon playing in his system. He may not want to see him necessarily leave. But how do you see this playing out? Because, again, like I said, Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, Declan Chisholm, who's below those first two I just mentioned, they're all waiver exempt, right? They could, in theory, still be with the Moose next year. You don't have to worry about losing them, right? The Johnny Kovaceviches, Leon Gavankes, those guys aren't, but they're right side guys. How do you see this playing out with the left side? Do you see that the Jets are going to move a veteran to bring up some of these young guys, or do you see the Jets more likely, quote, running it back? I'm really getting tired of saying that already today, but running it back with that defensive group, maybe with an actual structure in place, which might actually make them a more effective group, and being willing to either keep these guys on the farm or trade them as assets.
See, it's the number one question, Dave, because we need to know what the impact or influence that Rick Bowness is having on this roster. Does he view, like, because, I mean, I don't think that really that Mark Chipman and Kevin Cheveldayoff would absolutely love for Rick Bowness to go, you know what, validate these guys' decisions over last summer and say it was just a system. I know what to do with these guys. I know what to, you know, how to handle things. But I also think you have to do something's got to give, right? Where those you have guys like Ville Heinola, who isn't, I would argue, currently in the top six right now for this team. You know, I think Dylan Sandberg has surpassed him on the depth chart. I think it's a crowded, veteran-laden group. You know, Brendan Dillon's name's been out there because he has a reasonable contract at $3.9 million a season for the next couple of years. Like, there's a reason that you might want to ship him out. But I also think there's very, very much the possibility that this organization knows that injuries happen. That you can't just go, you know, that there's going to be opportunity. And we know that these guys have no problem with, you know, kind of sitting the younger guys. And here's the other part. And I'm, you know, I think Ville Heinola has had an interesting, you know, certainly an interesting experience as a Winnipeg Jet. But I think that it's one of those things where he's still just like 21 years old. You know what I mean? Like, he's not super old as a defenseman, but he should be getting more time. And that more time should come this season. So I think at this case is it, the, but the problem is you don't have enough veteran defensemen that are making, you know, kind of team friendly contracts to support those guys. You have guys like Brendan Dillon, who you waver between your second pairing and sometimes your third pairing, you know, guys like Dylan DeMello, Neil Pionk. You have all these guys making, you know, average to above average salaries on defense. So you need to find a place for them. You can't have one of those guys sitting. Now, Logan Stanley is the wild card on there. Logan Stanley 2 years ago, I thought had, you know, a bit of a, I don't want to suggest breakout season, but certainly a season in which he thought that maybe he could, you know, really cement himself in that top six. And then you have last season where I think you made the argument that he certainly cemented himself outside that top six, but they like his size. They like what he brings. They like his personality. They like, you know, they want to, you know, the idea of you can't teach size. So if you can teach a guy to use it that long of a stick effectively, I think there's, you know, in the long run, you're going to bode well, but how long of a leash do you give him at the expense of other younger, seemingly more skilled prospects? And so that's the big question here. I mean, I can pull out my crystal ball and guess. I would assume that someone needs to get moved. Someone has to get moved for those younger guys to get chances. Otherwise, I think what we're looking at here is another frustrating situation where you're going to have either, you know, guys starting with the Moose and coming up over injury, or, you know, trying to make their way into the lineup, much like we saw last season, to little success. And I think that's where it's headed at this point, unless they can swing a deal, because right now it's far too crowded. You need to make room for guys like Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg to have regular, you know, because you need to live off those salaries too. You can't just, you know what I mean? You have to trust guys. You have to be able to trust guys to come in with those kind of deals and contribute, you know, over their pay grade. And we just haven't seen that trust from the Jets staff. So I really don't have an answer for that. But the way it seems right now, unless they can move out a contract like a Brendan Dillon, which I know a lot of people don't want Brendan Dillon out either. I mean, he brings a physicality and a toughness to the lineup that I think the Jets need too. But if you don't like that move, then you're going to have to move someone like a Ville Heinola or Dylan Sandberg, who maybe not Dylan, because I think he's cracked that top six, but a Logan Stanley or someone, right? It's just, that's the, you know, I'm going to use that. It's not, that's above my pay grade, not my decision. But right now it's just, it's a busy dance floor and someone needs to take a seat.
Always insightful and articulate, Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press. Jeffrey, thanks for joining us this morning. We'll let you get on with your weekend. We'll do it again real soon, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Have a great one.
Thanks, Hammer.
There he goes. Jeff Hamilton joining us on the program. When we come back, more Jets talk at the bottom of the hour. Luke Fox from Sportsnet joins us to talk about free agency. Don't go anywhere. Much more to come. Drew Mandel.
I'm going to Columbus.
Ezzy's going to Columbus. We say goodbye to him. Stay tuned for more of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corydon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey! Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Saturday morning, hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Dave Minuk's head is on fire. Ezra Ginsberg is as handsome as ever still to
come. I just have a big head. It's not on fire. It's just a massive cranium.
I said you were handsome. I didn't say anything at all about your head. You insulted yourself.
Oh, no,
there.
I have a big head. Record, and Ruben, my son Ruben, has a big head. My hat is that's why I wear the IC, you know, FlexFit hats, because if I'm buying a new era 5950, it's got to be 7 7/8. I'm really close to 8, which is, I think, the biggest size. So I'm fine with that.
Yeah, there you go. Brain. Some breaking news about Ezzy's head size for all those who are desperately curious about that on this Saturday morning. You know, we've spent the most of the first hour or so talking, of course, about Pierre-Luc Dubois and his status here in Winnipeg and the will he, won't he, will he be here, will he be traded, arbitration, contract status, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, Blake Wheeler and Brendan Dillon, if you believe what Kevin Cheveldayoff said about on Wednesday about both of those guys, two names we've heard bandied about really for the last significant period of time as guys who might be on their way out of Winnipeg. Kevin Cheveldayoff on Wednesday basically said he envisioned them both coming into Winnipeg and being with the Jets at the start of next season. Now, there's no obligation for Kevin Cheveldayoff to be 100% truthful in that instance, as he was on Wednesday, but you know, what is the perspective that you guys have with regard to, let's start with Wheeler, because obviously he's the bigger of the two names as compared to Brendan Dillon and his status and his future and his availability as a member of the Winnipeg Jets moving forward.
Yeah, Dave mentioned this earlier. Frank brought this up on his podcast. Like that, the issue that I think I have and a lot of people have is if you're not retaining salary and you have to give up a significant asset for a team to take Blake Wheeler, like that's just not an ideal situation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, when you talk, whatever you want to say about Blake Wheeler is that he can put the puck in the net, he can facilitate, he's almost a point per game player, even at this point in his career. I don't know, you know, does that mean, is he going to score 65, 70 points? Maybe, but he's in that ballpark, right, boys? Like, you just look at his career stats. Like, I don't think Blake Wheeler's fallen off to the point where, you know, he's a fourth line guy that's only going to put up 30 points. It would be ridiculous to say that. Is he a third line winger? Is he a second line winger? I think, well, it depends what team you're talking about, right? But it certainly seems like things have cooled down, guys. Like, we're not really hearing, you know, any specific team that's after Wheeler, similar to Montreal with Dubois, right? I guess it would be, you know, the opposite. Dubois really is the one that's pursuing Montreal. But I agree with Hammer. There has to be mutual interest there. So, I mean, it's really hard to say right now because I think we all assumed that there was a good chance that the Jets would retain salary, and it changes everything if you're not retaining salary. And then also the question has to become, if the Jets do all of a sudden have $8 million more of cap space, what are they going to do with that? Like, are they going to use that? Like, some of it in theory would go to a Pierre-Luc Dubois contract, but you know, he could be moved between now and, you know, the beginning of the season in October. So it goes back to what we were talking about before, guys. Like, what is the team doing? Like, you know, I thought there was a good chance Brendan Dillon was going to be traded, you know, between, you know, the draft and, you know, today, basically. And that hasn't materialized. So, it's not a knock on Brendan Dillon. I think he's a good, solid defenseman who's, you know, well-liked in the Jets dressing room. But it's the logjam. You can't ignore the logjam on the left side. Like, I think Dylan Samberg is a more skilled Logan Stanley, who actually plays more physical than Logan Stanley. To me, Dylan Samberg, I agree, has to be in your top six next year. He's 23 years old. He was a 2017 draft pick. I think he showed enough in his, what was it, Dave, 15 games, right, with the Jets, I think, last year, 15 or 16 games. I think he's proven enough that he's earned the spot. So if you're not moving Brendan Dillon, I agree that the odd man out has to be Logan Stanley. Like, let's be honest. And it's not a knock on Logan Stanley either. Somebody has to move here. And I think it would be a travesty if the Jets moved Ville Heinola. I'm a big guy on Heinola. Like, I think I agree with Hammer. Like, let's not forget he's 21 years old. He was a 2019 draft. So let's not pretend like Ville Heinola is 25 and he's kind of a bust. Like, this is a guy who's never been given a full-time opportunity in the NHL. So there's too many guys on that left side and one of them has to get moved. I mean, that's as simple as that.
The organization has shoved draft and develop down everyone's throats for so many years. What message does it send, Dave, if all of a sudden, as it pertains to Ville Heinola, you know, you're drafting him, you've developed him over the last number of years, but now when he seems like he should be at least on the cusp of getting that full-time opportunity, you have to, you trade him for peanuts. I mean, what does that say for, you know, and it would actually be, you know, consistent with the messaging the team has delivered all year round about, you know, about there's no consistency in their messaging or what they say isn't actually factual. But I mean, you just can't just give them away for nothing.
No. And again, ultimately, unfortunately for Ville Heinola, he is waiver exempt, right? So, right. I mean, you do have that option to, you know, pretend like it's a double-edged sword because, I mean, some people would say, oh, he has nothing left to learn at the AHL level. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think you give him a shot. I don't think you can't really trade him for anything because what do you know? You have an excellent AHL defenseman. What do you know about him in the NHL? I mean, it's kind of like I parallel to the Eric Comrie situation. I don't know how many people would tell me on a daily basis, Eric Comrie cannot play in the NHL. And all I said to them was, give him a shot. Give him a shot to be what?
But they didn't know that they had no proof. They had no evidence that that wasn't.
Well, of course, they did. They had a small sample size of one game here, one game there. And, you know, again, like I said, he needed the opportunity. Guys need opportunity. I mean, when you've proven what they can do at the AHL level. And again, I'm not suggesting that Ville Heinola can't still learn, right? These guys are all learning. And one of the advantages, and I'm not going to go on a moose rant right now, but one of the advantages these guys all talked about, every one of these Moose players, Dylan Samberg. I mean, I talk to these guys, you know, fairly regularly when I'm covering the Moose, and I did it in the media availabilities. One of the things they talked about, Declan Chisholm, Johnny Kovacevic, all these Jets draft picks, they all talked about how they learn from each other and the benefits of, you know, Ville Heinola watching Johnny Kovacevic do something and picking up part of that game, Johnny Kovacevic doing the same with him, Declan Chisholm. It's like Dylan Samberg. All these guys learn and grow from each other and you know, I know some people are pillorying him, but Eric Dubois is a heck of a good defensive coach, and he's been very good helping these D prospects grow in different elements of their game. So I'm not the kind of person who's ever going to say you can't still learn in the AHL, and it doesn't. We live in an instant gratification society, right? The kid is 21 years old. I mean, realistically, he's not even in his prime yet. He will be soon, but he's not necessarily in his prime right now. I just think there's an opportunity for him. You have to find it. And you have to look, Josh Morrissey isn't going anywhere, right? How many people wanted to dump Josh Morrissey? Give him away to Seattle. Well, that would have proven like a poor decision. Now the Jets still need to have a effective partner for Josh Morrissey. It's something we've talked about for quite some time. The right side of the D isn't quite as strong as the left. And you need that kind of one, that number one defenseman, which I think would complement Josh Morrissey. But ultimately, yeah, you don't want to get rid of Brendan Dillon. You want Dylan Samberg in your lineup. Logan Stanley, you know, after taking that step forward, didn't necessarily do anything to merit a spot, but he's no longer waiver exempt. And you kept him over Dylan DeMello in the thing. But the truth is, ultimately, you can change your mind. right? You know, nobody is stuck with the decision. And the truth is, if ultimately you decide Logan Stanley isn't the player for you or your organization because guys have surpassed him, like Dylan Sandberg or Ville Heinola, well, you don't necessarily know Ville Heinola, we assume he has, then you know what? Here's a crazy notion. Like, you want the organization to be happy, but ultimately, you also have to be aware you don't want Ville Heinola or Dylan Sandberg being your seventh defenseman. You don't want them sitting. Now, the advantage, again, is that they can go down and play games for the Moose if there's not an opportunity for them to play in that top six. Because, again, you can't. These guys aren't good. People say, oh, they'll play the right offside. They don't generally. I watched Sandberg did it a little bit, didn't like it, and Heinola did it, didn't like it. So, generally, they play on their true sides.
But even if you have Brendan Dillon playing on the right side, or even if you have Ville Heinola and then Drew, you know, we'll get you in here. Like, even if you have guys playing on their offsides, there's still too many guys on the left side, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the issue I have. Like, this isn't personal. I mean, going back to what we were talking about with Johnny Gaudreau and the Columbus Blue Jackets, I am not defending Johnny Gaudreau, and I think he probably could have been a little more sympathetic, I would say, to the Flames fans in his comment when he was asked about, you know, leaving. Like, I think he could have probably handled that a little bit better. But at the end of the day, this is pro sports. These guys can go wherever they want. And, you know, this is a big boy business. Like, this isn't minor hockey. This is the NHL. And the Jets are going to have to move one of these players. And it's not personal. It doesn't mean that the Jets, you know, are being mean to Logan Stanley. It's that you have a first round pick and a second round pick in Dylan Sandberg and Ville Heinola that need to play hockey. Let's stop pretending like these are 18-year-olds now. Sandberg's 23, Heinola's 21. They got to play full time.
I'm not sure that the defense needs to be resolved at this point in time. And hear me out on this one. Look, in my estimation, if Logan Stanley as the defense is currently constructed, should be your seventh defenseman. Your left side should be Morrissey, Dillon, and Sandberg in whatever order. I'm not doing it in any order. And your right side should be Schmidt and Pionk and DeMello. Stanley is your seventh. I'm fine with that. Well, you know what? What do they say that you usually need? How many defensemen do they usually say it takes to get through a season? About 10 defensemen, right? So I'd be concerned.
Around the playoffs, especially around the playoffs. Yeah, 10, I would agree. I would be concerned
that if you started subtracting from your defense already, that maybe you would end up being a little bit thin. Let Heinola come into training camp and win a spot, or let him go to the Moose to start the season and win a spot at the NHL level, and then make the move when your hand is forced to make the move. I don't think that their hand is being forced to make the move right now on the back end. That's my, you know, if I had an area of concern or an area of focus or a move that needs to be made from the Jets' perspective, it is certainly up front more than on the back end. Because as you've articulated, Dave, the Jets have options as it pertains to Sandberg and Heinola. Now, I think Sandberg has proven that he belongs at the NHL level. Has Heinola proven that? I would say not yet, but that's more of a function probably of opportunity than necessarily skill set. So when is he going to get that opportunity? I don't know. Maybe the Jets stay perfectly healthy on the back end all season long, and Heinola doesn't get that opportunity at the NHL level. Now, that would be unfortunate, but it would also be pretty unlikely. We know what Logan Stanley is as a defenseman. You know, he is a limited third pairing left side guy. He doesn't play with the physicality you would want of somebody that's, you know, 6'7", sort of Tyler Myers-esque in that regard.
You see it once in a while. You see that kind of big size, that temper.
Rarely.
Well, I think you see it once in a while. I agree. He's not Scott Stevens.
No. But I mean, you know, so if you want, look, if you're, I'd be concerned that if you traded Brendan Dillon, and then all of a sudden, maybe Heinola isn't as NHL ready as we think, you know, after an evaluation period, then all of a sudden, well, now you're a little bit thin on the back end, and Logan Stanley is in your top six, and then right behind him, there isn't necessarily somebody who's ready-made to come into the lineup. I'm not as concerned about the Jets defense. If the Jets defense starts the season with the seven guys they have under NHL contract right now, and Heinola is at the Moose or is in the, you know, in a training camp battle, I'm okay with that. To me, my concern would be way more up front, because you look at the forward group for the Jets, and I just don't know how Blake Wheeler, who's your captain and who's been on the trade block and who's been, sounds like, mentally preparing to leave the city, can all of a sudden come right back into the dressing room and expect everything to be hunky-dory. To me, that's just a disconnect of reality and expectations for the Jets captain and for the human side of things. And this is a guy in Wheeler who's tightly wound in the best case scenario. And this wouldn't be a best case scenario coming back to this dressing room right now.
I agree with you, Drew, but I think what's also being forgotten a little bit about is that how are the Jets going to replace the aggregate, if you want to use a Moneyball term? I know you guys like the Moneyball references. You know, how are you going to replace Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny and, you know, like possibly Blake Wheeler? But let's just you know, assume that Wheeler and Dubois are back. You still have holes in your top nine, right? Like, I like Morgan Barron's game. I think Morgan Barron's very intriguing, probably for a third line role. I think you guys agree, but, you know, he loves size. He's got a scoring touch. You know, he's proven it at the AHL level, but I think in a brief stint with the Jets, you know, I think a lot of people liked what they saw, right? So Morgan Barron's obviously a candidate for the third line, and obviously Lowry is most likely your third line center, and then whoever else is on your third line, right? We know Cole Perfetti is going to play in the top six, most likely on the wing, but there's still a hole there, right? Like,
there's lots of holes.
Know, it's
there.
Not going to be exactly, but what I'm saying, Drew, is like you mentioned Blake Wheeler, and you know whether that trade's going to happen if it happens, but like even looking beyond Blake Wheeler, like there's a lot of question marks. What's your fourth line going to look like? Like Jansen Harkins, you know, and Appleton, who I mentioned, I mean, they've been qualified, so they're going to play roles. But like, to me, it's kind of a mishmash, right? Like you have players that you don't really know where they fit right now. And, you know, I was talking to Dave before we came on, like I realized that, you know, the Jets usually don't dip their toes into free agency, but I look at a guy who's available in Nino Niederreiter, like a guy like that. And, you know, what's he going to make? Around $5 million, something like that. And you could say, well, the Jets, they can't afford that right now, but why not? Like, we don't know where is that money going right now? Like, is that going to Pierre-Luc Dubois? Like, you know, could you get $8 million of relief from Blake Wheeler? Like, I feel like, you know, this might be an opportunity for, you know, the Jets to dip into free agency. I don't think a guy like Nazem Kadri is coming here. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen. I think there's a good chance he stays in Colorado, to be honest with you. I just don't see a guy like Kadri signing with the Jets. That's not a knock on the Jets. I just don't. It's the reality.
I agree with you about Colorado. I think he's trying. Yeah. I think the Avs are trying to figure out a way to make some space to get him under contract there.
Well, they want to win the Stanley Cup, right? And they gave Valeri Nichushkin the big money. You got to think that they'll find a way to make it work, right? Like it's Joe Sakic here. I think he'll find a way to get Nazem Kadri done before the season starts. But the point I was trying to make is that, I mean, regardless if you know, Juan Wheeler traded, and that's a big if, I mean, I still think, you know, they need help on the wings. They're definitely thinner than they were, you know, a few months back when they had Paul Stastny and Andrew Kopp.
I would agree wholeheartedly with that. Final thought to you, Dave, on this topic before we head to break. I mean, this is the continued uncertainty for the Jets group up front is I think now the headline of this offseason. Wheeler, Dubois, and filling in those gaps that, as he mentioned.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, ultimately, we talk about the glut on the defense, but as I outlined, these guys could be stashed in the minors, and really, while people wouldn't be happy with it, ultimately, they don't really have much choice, because what does the team have? Team control. So there's no question about it, right? You're right now, you're minus Paul Stastny. Right now, you're minus Andrew Kopp. Those are just two players you have to fill their roles with. Now, we know David Gustafson is going to come in next year and be a full-time Winnipeg Jet. We know Morgan Barron, who had a really good playoffs, four straight games with a goal, Manitoba in the first round battle against Milwaukee. He looked really good. And again, the playoffs are a different animal. So he really kind of, his game sort of rose up a little bit with what we were able to see. So, there will be opportunity. You know, does he fill out a third line with Lowry, Appleton, and Barron? Then you have Gustafson on that fourth, you know, with maybe a Harkins and Toninato, and then we'll see where everything else plays out, right? You got to wonder where Cole Perfetti is, but ultimately you have to think about the depth. And where is that depth coming from ultimately when some guys get injured? Because you don't have that necessarily what, you know, you've got young prospects working in the system, right? Henry Nikkanen is going to be with the Moose next year. Daniel Torgerson will be, I can't remember his situation because of the European clause. So he may not be available. I think he is, but I'm not 100% sure. But the point is there are some prospects, but are they ready to make that jump to the NHL? We'll have to wait and see.
When we come back, Luke Fox of Sportsnet joins us for more hockey talk. Don't go anywhere. Bottom of hour number two, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, we're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Pleased to be joined to talk about everything that went down in a very busy free agency period by Luke Fox of Sportsnet. Luke, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are things?
Oh, things are good. Starting to calm down now, finally. It's been a wild ride. Like, I was covering the cup, covering the draft, and then free agency. Lots of bombs dropped. So fun times to be a hockey writer, but it's finally calming down now, which is nice.
Nothing bigger. No, it wasn't a bomb, but it was a cannon in Columbus with the signing of Johnny Gaudreau, something that absolutely left jaws wide open throughout the entire NHL, especially in Calgary, where I think they're still trying to come to grips with it all. You know, can you think of anything similar in NHL history in terms of free agency where a player who had a world of options chooses a market that he didn't really seem to have any direct ties to and doesn't seem and isn't one of the so-called big, you know, big markets? It just seemed like this was an absolute stunner, the likes of which we haven't seen before in the NHL,
which I think is awesome because so much in our sport, so much gets leaked. There's so much chatter behind the scenes that the insiders usually have a pretty good peg on who's going where. So to have Columbus come out of nowhere, I think it's just phenomenal. A comparison, nothing immediately pops to mind. I don't know. Did you guys have one? Could you recall one?
Nothing in the NHL. The only thing that ever came to mind comes back at when NFL free agency started. And I'm really dating myself. When Reggie White, the late Reggie White, the fearsome defensive end, went from Philadelphia to Green Bay. Green Bay, of course, being the smallest market basically in professional sports. And that was the only thing that sort of came to mind in any other professional sport. But in the NHL, certainly nothing that jumped to my mind.
Yeah, the one thing, like when you think about it a little bit more, it kind of does fit in with Johnny Gaudreau's personality a little bit. Like, he's a low-key guy. I couldn't tell you how many times, you know, I've tried to talk to him and get him really going in an interview. And he keeps his answers short. He's so low-key, mild-mannered, and I think that city actually suits him. He's not one of these superstars that you immediately think, like, this guy needs to be in Manhattan or something. Like, I think now that he's starting a family, Columbus will be a great spot for him. I think it helped that he has a few familiar faces, you know, going along there with him. He has some ties. It's a shorter flight to his family in the East. He's in the Metro Division, so he's going to spend lots of time in the Philly, New Jersey area. So I get it from that point. How he waited till the last minute and Brad Treliving left so much on the table. Like, you cannot fault the Flames for trying to keep him there. That added some drama to it, and I'm sure some hurt feelings in Calgary. But I honestly think if you're a Flames fan, this might be the best thing for you. Like, how is that Johnny Gaudreau contract going to age if you actually gave him 10.5 for 8 years? Like, this could be the best thing for them that it didn't work out. I'm sure it's a stunner, and I'm sure it's going to affect how they approach the Matthew Tkachuk negotiations going forward, because they cannot be left high and dry like this, letting a superstar walk out the door with zero return. I mean, the Islanders, it still is sore with Islanders fans that Tavares left with zero return. And to me, this has made me think, like, if you have a superstar, you have to treat the trade deadline or the summer before as the deadline. You can't let them string it along and walk out the door for free. You have to draw a harder line and be firmer, I think, in your stance with these guys. You like it here? We want to keep you. Here's millions and millions of dollars. Put that signature on paper. We can't just say, oh, well, we'll take you at your word that you really like it here.
I agree with you and how that affects Matthew Tkachuk, Luke, because we already knew he was going to get a big contract based on, you know, his season and just the type of player he is. So I don't think anybody in Calgary, Flames fans, or really anybody's going to be surprised if, you know, he gets $10 to $11 million a year. He's the MVP of that team, right? So I think you're right. You got to lock him up, preferably to 8 years. And I got to take it to the Atlantic Division. And we can go Leafs, Luke, but we obviously have to go Atlantic Division when you look at what Ottawa did and what Detroit did. And also the fact that Winnipeg didn't do anything. So we aren't going to be able to talk a lot about free agent signings unless we want to talk about Big Save Dave. But what were your thoughts on what Detroit and Ottawa did? Because I think there is a bit of a theme this year, right? Like I was telling the guys, you know, in the first hour, I hate, you know, the constant references to Columbus being a non-traditional market or an obscure market. I mean, I get it, but it's a hockey team. It's a city. It's like, it's one of 32 cities. Yeah. And I think it's kind of a disservice to the people of Columbus. I've never been to that city, but I've heard such great things that people treat it as if it's, you know, the armpits of America or something like that. Like it's a good city that doesn't happen to be Vegas or Florida. Right. But just back to Detroit and Ottawa, sorry, I'm going on a bit of a tangent here. What did you think of those two teams moves? Obviously, you know, it's debatable whether it's going to make those two teams playoff teams, but certainly when you look at the Red Wings and, you know, bringing in Andrew Kopp, you know, David Perron, mm-hmm. Ben Chiarot, might have overpaid a little bit for some of these guys, but were they one of the big winners for you on day one of free agency?
Yeah, I think they're a winner in that it's been a lot of years now. Like Stevie Yzerman has been really patient after that incredible run of consecutive playoff appearances. But he's been extremely patient, and I kept waiting for the offseason where it's like they're going to turn the corner and say, okay, we've scorched the earth. Now let's actually find some legitimate NHL hockey players. You know, when you look at some of these contracts, like the Chiarot one in particular, I'm like, that's a little steep. Like both in terms and dollars, it's a little steep for me. But I do like the fact that, you know, they're finally turning the corner. I don't know if Detroit's done enough to be a playoff team right away and be in that wild card mix, because I just don't know if Tampa's taken far enough step back, if Toronto's taken far enough a step back, if Boston's taken far enough step back. I think all three of those teams have taken a step back, though, and that gap between the haves and the have-nots that was so severe in the Atlantic will be closed a little bit. And I think it's good for the fan base, too, because Detroit – the timing of it was odd. They opened up the new Little Caesars Arena, which is an awesome facility. I don't know if any of you guys have been there, but it's one of my favorite barns in the whole league. They've kind of mixed the nostalgia with the new school type of stylings, in that they have like awesome little restaurants on the concourse and stuff, but they at the same time, they honor their history. So they made this big splash with this cool new arena, and they didn't have a real hockey team to play in it. Like they had, you know, they were just, you knew they were lottery bound every year. So this is the first year where it's okay, we're making some noise. I like the Andrew Kopp addition. I really like the gamble they took on Billy Husso, because he showed some flashes and he's still young. So I think his ceiling and his prime could align right when the Red Wings are ready to contend again. So I think it's a positive step. For me, the biggest winner the last few weeks is Pierre Dorion. Like, him going out and getting Alex DeBrincat, I thought a very reasonable rate. Him locking up Josh Norris when the Brady Tkachuk contract dispute lingered all the way in and kind of clouded over their whole summer. So to get that taken care of quickly, to get Matt Murray off the books was a nice bit of business. I just love the summer that Dorian's having. And I think that is the team. Like, if there's one team that could contend for the wild card, for me, it's the Senators. I'm still not sold on their D, and they need to get a little bit lucky. Cam Talbot needs to play like primetime Cam Talbot and doesn't need to take a step back, but they could be in the mix. I really like what the Senators have done, and it's same sort of thing. Like, their arena isn't built, but now there's optimism around moving downtown to Le Breton Flats. So it's good to see that, right? Like, it gets kind of old, and I'm sure no one knows this more than Sabres fans, but it gets kind of old when your rebuild is just going on forever. Yeah. So it's nice to see these teams taking a turn in the Atlantic.
15-year Buffalo Sabres rebuild.
Yeah.
Saturday morning, you're live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Luke Fox of Sportsnet is our guest as we're recapping a very busy week of free agent signings here in the NHL.
Well, Luke, as he touched on it, the Jets weren't busy, so we're not going to pretend like we have to talk about any of the moves that were made. But maybe we'll talk about something that happened, transpired during free agency, was some of the comments by Pat Brisson and everything that's happening in Montreal. You know, from someone who's not in this market, what were your reaction to that? Because, like, as far as we've talked about it in the first hour of our program, I don't ever remember hearing an agent be that overt in his dialogue. And my French is not what it should be, but like what he was saying and just even, you know, the Montreal GM, obviously Ken Johnson was talking about it. What was your reaction to the Pierre-Luc Dubois saga?
Well, there was a lot. Like, I was down in Montreal for the draft, and you heard the name Pierre-Luc Dubois a lot. Like, there was a lot of rumors flying around. Like, even at the Cup final, his name was a hot topic amongst reporters and industry types. And there was even talk of, like, maybe Montreal should trade Winnipeg for the first pick. Like, do you want Dubois as your number one center and instead of Shane Wright? I mean, they end up going with Slafkovský and the winger anyway, but that's how long this has kind of been brewing behind the scenes. And the fact that it came out that Dubois was looking to leave 2 years before he's actually done in Winnipeg, like that's the earliest, like, if, you know, they can get him the 1 year qualifying offer RFA. Like, it's very rare for that to go public so soon, right? It's like a whole season in advance that the guy has 1 foot out the door, it seems. So I'm curious how that's sitting with Winnipeg's fan base. I mean, you guys had a similar situation, I guess, with Jacob Trouba, where it just was like every contract negotiation was a grind, and it just seemed inevitable that this wasn't going to be a long-term solution. And then the same thing with Laine, like, what's the temperature there?
Not great. Not great. The fan base wants to know what a strategy is, what the approach is, yeah, what the thinking is, and they're not getting anything resembling that, you know, from management here at all.
Well, I just think, you know, so you give up Line A to get Dubois, and mm-hmm. the way you win that trade, and I don't think either GM's won that trade yet because neither guy is under contract. So the way you win that trade is the guy signs long-term and you get his prime years and he's productive and he scores a bunch of goals, or in Dubois' case, you know, plays a great two-way game, shuts down the other team's best center, that type of thing. But both GMs are in a very tricky spot. Like, the mood in Columbus seems a little bit more positive, and you have to think if you're Patrick Laine, you're encouraged by the fact that Kekalainen's out there spending, bringing in Gaudreau, and that would be a formidable 1-2 punch of offense, those two guys. It sounds like they want to get a deal done, but it sounds like they're really far apart. So to me, how these things shake out, whether that's Chevy getting a great return and trade for Dubois, or finding a way to mend this fence versus what happens with Kekalainen and Laine, the winner of that blockbuster of a season ago is still up in the air.
Luke, everybody is looking at the goaltending situation in Toronto and they're basically holding their nose a little bit. From your perspective, did the Leafs acquire Matt Murray to be the long-term answer in goal, or did they acquire him to maybe be a stopgap through a large part of the regular season and then maybe see about an upgrade closer to the trade deadline and entering into the playoffs?
Well, if you follow the Leafs last year, making that upgrade midseason is tough to do. Mm-hmm. Like, they tried hard to do that because there was a point there heading into the trade deadline where their greatest concern was their goaltending. Neither Mrazek or Campbell had a perfect bill of health. They even tried to get Harry Sateri off waivers. I don't know if you remember that. And yeah, Arizona came and scooped them at the deadline. Like, this has been a problem for the Leafs, having stable goaltending, basically since Freddie Anderson kind of faltered towards the end of his 5 years here. And to me, it's a bit of a stopgap solution because they didn't want to go term with Jack Campbell. Jack wanted 5 years and no one will blame the guy. He's going to make pretty much as much in his first year in Edmonton as he made in his whole career in the NHL. Like, no one faults this guy for going out and getting paid. But Kyle Dubas made it very clear he wasn't willing to go that deep on term. So part of the attractiveness of Murray is that there's only 2 years left on his deal. I still think it's a fantastic gamble to take, because you got two guys that you're hoping for bounce back years in Murray and Samsonov. When you have 2 years left of Austin Matthews under contract, when your job is basically on the line this season, you haven't won a round in six straight years with this core, it is going to be tense. And I really worry about the start the Maple Leafs get on and the start Matt Murray gets on. If things go south early, this fan base is going to turn on them. There's going to be some sharply written articles, I'm sure, by me and some of my colleagues, and it could spiral. So I think October and early November is going to take on a lot of importance, ironically, when all that really should matter is April for this team. But all of a sudden, the beginning of the season, it gets really interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you, Luke. And I think you make a really good point when you talk about, you know, Ilya Samsonov also looking for a bounce back year.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, his recent numbers are not as good, let's not forget that, you know, he's a pretty good goaltender as well. So if the 1A, 1B situation, or, you know, whoever happens to be playing better gets the net, I don't think it's as bad as some people think. I think it's a bit polarizing. I think you would agree amongst Leafs right now whether or not, you know, their goaltending is better. I think if you take the aggregate, it's definitely better. You'd agree with that, right? In terms of getting rid of Peter Mrazek and just having two better number one goalies in the system right now. I wanted to ask you about Carolina, because I think, you know, the moves that they made, I mean, weren't expected, at least from a lot of people, myself included. But when you consider, I think they scored 13 goals, if I'm not mistaken, 14 goals in that series against the Rangers. And they said, you know, this wasn't about, you know, improving our goal scoring and our offense. But clearly, what do Max Pacioretty and Brent Burns do? They score goals and they create goals, right? I thought that those were really smart moves. And, you know, we talked about, you know, Ottawa. You mentioned Ottawa was a big winner for you. Like, I think when you look at the Hurricanes, I mean, is that not a better team than it was, you know, just a week ago? Like, you add Burns and Pacioretty, who, even though they're, you know, in the back nine of their career, I mean, these guys produce.
Yeah, Pacioretty, like, he's had injury issues, but what he does is score goals. And they got him for nothing. They got him for future considerations, which is code for zero. and then Brent Burns. I just love the fact that, you know, if you're Don Waddell, think about the nice bit of work he did. Like, Tony D'Angelo was unsigned, and he ended up getting a bunch of picks just for his rights to Philly. I think Chuck Fletcher has had a bad offseason. I think Don Waddell has had a fantastic offseason. And, you know, to get a guy like Brent Burns, who can drive offense, takes a ton of shots. This is like a high event team all of a sudden. I really like what they've done. And already they're solid on D, right? Like, they are committed. Their forwards are committed. You got a guy like Jordan Staal, who always prioritizes defense. But then you got, you know, Jacob Slavin, Brett Pesce. You got pure defenders. So those guys can kind of, you know, hang back and let Brent Burns do his thing and take his chances and be that sort of hybrid winger defenseman that he can be. And also, you know, Brent Burns didn't have the greatest couple of seasons, and you wonder how much a part of that is because things were flat out crummy in San Jose. You know, they go from Stanley Cup finalists to a team that's maybe on the bubble if they get lucky, but basically a non-playoff team. And I don't know. I'm not a player. I'm not in their heads, but you could see why you'd have a sudden jolt of motivation if all of a sudden you're on a legitimate contender. The Hurricanes are a legitimate cup contender in my mind. Mm-hmm. And would that not inspire you, if you're Brent Burns, to go and have the summer of your life, ripping around your RV, biking everywhere, and lifting weights in Walmart parking lots or whatever he does, right? Like, I just think he's going to be an awesome addition. Just this jolt of positive energy, and that to me is I think that's the team to beat in the Metro.
You know, Luke, the Stanley Cup isn't won or lost in free agency necessarily, but there's still a number of players that you know, haven't found new homes yet. I was looking at your top 10 remaining UFAs, sorry. Where do you see, how do you see that playing out? Guys like Nino Niederreiter, who, as he was talking about, guy like Nazem Kadri, how do you see that kind of finishing out? And again, there are still, who would you pick as your peg, sorry, as your kind of best option for a team that could, is looking for some, an addition to make for, you know, like I said, like a Jets style team who need to kind of augment their roster?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if they can, they can afford him, but Niederreiter, I think, would look good on the Jets. Mm-hmm. You know, you lost some of that gritty power forward type guy, versatile, can play middle six in Andrew Kopp. And I think Niederreiter, you know, he had a nice season, kind of under the radar, but he's become more defensively responsible. He's a big body. I would like him in Winnipeg. I don't know what the level of interest. I haven't even heard that many rumors about teams kicking around on him, but I think wherever he lands, he's going to be a nice secondary type scorer, nice asset to have. And yeah, Chevy's been so quiet that I wonder if he'd look there. I don't think he's in the Kadri sweepstakes, but it is fascinating to me. You know, usually day one free agency, it's the big guys that go first, and then, you know, teams that miss out on them kind of scramble and fill in the gaps with the second tier options. To me, Kadri was the number one center that was truly available, especially with Bergeron sounding like he's signing back anytime and Malkin deciding to stay. Like, Kadri was the guy up the middle, and John Klingberg was the guy on defense in terms of any sort of defenseman with top 4 minute pedigree, right shot, can run a power play. The fact that those guys were on the weekend now, and those guys are still on sign, still making their decision, is really fascinating. From what I've heard, Kadri's kind of waiting to see if some teams that are in the bidding can clear out some space so that they can afford him. What's really fascinating is that Colorado hasn't given up. Like, I thought he had the kind of season that he would just price himself out and be gone. But, you know, Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland there, getting Nichushkin back, getting some nice role players back like Cogliano, and still being in the mix for Kadri is really commendable and shows how much he loved being there. You know, I got to think Lou Lamoriello is sniffing around here somewhere, because the Islanders haven't made a splash, right? Like, there was some thought that maybe they'd take a run at Goudreau. They haven't made any major additions. I wonder if he's looking at Kadri and licking his chops, and no one would even hear about it though if he is. So it's good. There's still some intrigue, and we're here in the second half of July.
Lots to still keep an eye on. Luke Fox will continue to do so for our friends at Sportsnet. Luke, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We'll let you get on with your weekend. I know you got a radio hit coming up in about 10 minutes time, so good luck with that. Enjoy that, and thanks so much.
We used to be on radio, Luke.
Always nice chatting with you guys. Have a good summer.
Take care, Luke.
Cheers,
you
Luke.
Too. Thanks you too. So much. Take care. There he goes, Luke Fox of Sportsnet. Yes, we used to be on
remember
radio.
That guy? Remember that radio station that we used to be on?
Yeah, no, but we wouldn't be talking to Luke Fox if we were still on TSN.
Why does that feel like that was like 20 years ago? Like, it wasn't that long ago, but it feels like it was.
It does feel like a long time ago. You're right, Ezzy, but this is a much better format, as we've talked about all since we changed to this format, and it's because of you, the audience, who join us each and every Saturday, who join us after each and every Winnipeg Jets game during the season for the post-game shows, and of course, you know, been the loyal audience that is here with us through thick and thin, through with us, with Kenny and Rennie, with Winnipeg Sports Talk, Huss and Remus, and we, of course, appreciate all the support. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and tell your friends and tell your family. They're the best place to be every Saturday morning. And after each and every Winnipeg Jets game is, of course, the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. Gentlemen, still a fascinating offseason for the Winnipeg Jets. I know the start of free agency has come and gone. It's not the final show of the year, Bailey. We're not going anywhere yet. We're still here right through the end of July, so we're not going anywhere. Don't you worry about that. We'll be back next Saturday as well. But so many unanswered questions still about this Winnipeg Jets team. And that has been the story of the offseason, you know, since the start of it, is where are the Jets going to go? What is the plan? What's the direction? What's the approach? What's the strategy? What's the thinking? And it's still just a giant question mark. I pantomimed the question mark if you were wondering what I was doing there. But that continues to be where our focus is going to be over the next couple of weeks as things continue with this 2022 offseason for the Winnipeg Jets, gentlemen.
Put on your antlers. It's time for the Manuk Moose Minute on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, what's that? It's a Manuk Moose Minute. How did that happen?
Did you do that, Dave M?
I may have, because I knew you weren't going to, Drew. And with the Moose making some moves, I'm sorry, boys. It was time for a Manuk Moose Minute.
I like it. Dave just hit that button. He didn't care. He was going forward with his own agenda. Attaboy, Dave.
As soon as I saw that little break in Mindell's speech, I was like, I'm not letting Ginsburg get in here. It's time for a Manuk Moose Minute. Because
do it quickly. Some of us have a birthday party that they got to get the kids to.
All right. Well, that's fine.
Happy third birthday, Jacob.
It'll be quick, because the Moose did announce, but there were three signings by the Moose yesterday. Nicholas Jones, hardworking member of the lunch pail line, he got a 2-year deal. Greg Morales, he's an Ottawa product from, he just played in his second year as a pro. Really nice facilitator. He got a 1-year deal. And then Manitoban from Portage La Prairie, Dean Stewart, he also signed, he's a defenseman. He signed a 1-year deal. So three signings by the Moose to bring. They are running it back, but, you know, they were a really good team last year. So them running it back, folks won't be upset about. Some bad news as well, which I broke yesterday, which is that Captain Jimmy Olin, he suffered an injury training for the season. So he's actually going to be out of the lineup for till at least Christmas. So that's kind of bad news for the Moose. And he's would explain some of the left side signings, because he is a left side defenseman. So there is your Manuk Moose Minute.
Well, there you have it. We're going to end it on that note, because you can't beat Dave M, as it is no point in us even trying. Want to say a big thank you to Jeff Hamilton and Luke Fox for joining us on the show this morning. Want to say a big thank you to all the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make this show, who make the post-game show, who make the website a possibility. Our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway have some great swag courtesy of our friends at Betway for the coming season. Stay tuned for that. Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel for that. Bernstein's Deli, currently under renovation. They're going to reopen real soon, so you can get your hands on an Illegal Curve sandwich. Tough Duck, hardest hitting comment. You know that. Get used to that. And coming back, of course, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. If you haven't already done so, even though I'm sure you have, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, follow us on all of our social media platforms, and tell your friends, tell your family. The best place to be every Saturday morning and after every Winnipeg Jets game is the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.